And then subsequently, we went to two drills, and we completed 10,000 meters of drilling last year. And this year, we doubled the drills again to four drills, and initially a 20,000 meter program, which we've subsequently doubled now to 40,000 meters. So we expect to complete 40,000 meters of drilling at LMS this year, which combined with the drilling from last year and 2024 would take us to, roughly 54,000 meters of drilling.
Welcome back, everybody. Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. I have with me today Darren Klink, President and Director of Aris Minerals. How are you, Darren?
Doing well, Steve. Great to be here.
Well, thank you for being here. For those who do not know your story, Darren, if you can tell us so who Aris Minerals is first by starting with your ticker, your website, and how people can find you.
Sure. So yeah, Aris Minerals, ARK on the Toronto Stock Exchange Venture, or ARRKF. On the OTC, the website is Aris, ARRAS, minerals.com. Company's based in Vancouver, but 100% focused in Kazakhstan, focusing really on large-scale exploration for copper-gold projects in the northeastern part of the country.
Well, Darren, if you can give us, you said the Kazakhstan, if you can just kind of give us the 50,000-foot view, if you can start with just kind of wide a jurisdiction, what landed you there, as well as the flagship you got going, and what else is on your radar?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. So Kazakhstan may be a jurisdiction that is not super well known to many of your followers. Part and parcel, in fact, about 4.5, 5 years ago, Aris was really the first North American company on the junior side to enter into the country on the back of a new mining legislation and a lot of reforms that took place in Kazakhstan following 2018. And so in 2018, in the mining space, for example, brand new mining law was enacted, and effectively the government looked globally at, what worked. And they narrowed in on Australia and Canada, two very well-known sort of, mining jurisdictions in terms of policy. And effectively copied those policies and upgraded and really changed the course, I think, for mining exploration and development in Kazakhstan going forward. Historically, much like the other Central Asian nations, they had a structure that was very similar, but going back to Soviet times. And of course, Kazakhstan has been independent now for 35 years. And this is part and parcel of a broad base of structural governance, financial reforms that President Tokayev took over and started to implement. And so on the back of that, Tim Berry, our CEO and director and my business partner on this, identified an opportunity in Kazakhstan. It was really in the back end of COVID. So like many places, the country was tough to get into and restrictions to get in and out. But what really attracted us was, number one, you had a substantial and very well-documented mineral endowment. Number two, a lot of mining going on and has, for many decades, in fact. And in fact, it's a top 10 producer of many of the things that we use every day today on a global basis. But an interesting scenario where you've got this new mining law that's been brought in that's really a Western approach to things, and 30 years plus or minus of really not much modern exploration, because when the Soviet Union collapsed in Russia, the Central Asian nations, all the former Soviet Union countries, really the game in town was to get your hands on assets and generate cash flow, and then in many cases, take that cash flow out of the country. And so what we saw in Kazakhstan was really not a lot of modern exploration through the 90s and 2000s. And so when we arrived, this new mining law, the ability to get in the country and acquire ground, state ground effectively underneath the new Mining Act. And so we very quickly assembled what was the third largest land holding in the country behind Rio Tinto and Fortescue, focused on copper gold. And then really went to work. And so fast forward now to where we are, in 5 years time, we've done a substantial amount of work across the broader land package. Our main focus over the last 24 months, to 30 months really has been on the LMS project, where we announced the first set of drill results that we have done in early last year. So call it about 18, 20 months ago. And we feel we're on the cusp really for a very large scale copper gold system. And that's on the Alamos project. About 20 minutes drive from a town called Ekipastuz, which is 3 hours east of the capital city, Astana, on a four-lane paved highway.
Darren, if you can tell me a bit about Kazakhstan as a jurisdiction, how friendly? I mean, you did mention the leadership transition, but how friendly and moreover, what's the timeline look like when it comes to permitting?
Sure. So I think, one of the differentiators, and I've spent most of my career working, throughout Southeast Asia, Latin America. I've, been involved with mine developments in Western countries though too, like New Zealand and the United States. And one of the things that really jumped out at me in Kazakhstan, I think, was that you had this policy, this new mining policy that looked very similar to what we were used to in the West. But you had an understanding, not only at the government level, but more importantly, I think, around the broader populations of how important mining is, and not only from the perspective of it producing many of the things that we need every day, but from an economic perspective, and really that it underpins a lot of really in important sort of economic aspects of the Kazakh economy. Oil and gas, metals and mining, agriculture, three of the big industries in Kazakhstan. And so for us, when you overlay that with the new policy that we recognize, and really an acceptance, in fact, in no places I think if I've ever been, and I've been to a lot of countries now, do you go to the National Museum and you see an actual section of the National Museum on mining and the importance in the country. For us, we really started to get a high level of comfort. And then when you add on the next step with, well, how do you get a hold of ground? How do you start doing exploration, which is your point? What we found is that when land become available, and it still is to this day, you can put in your application, and within 30 days you get recognition as to whether or not you've been granted the license or not. It then takes you somewhere between 30 to 60 days to get your drill permits. And it's quite prescriptive. It's very straightforward, and really on an annualized basis. And we've been doing this now for 4 or 5 years. We submit our annualized reports in terms of the exploration work that we're doing. We've got annualized commitments on each of the licenses, and as long as you're doing your work, you're in great shape, and you just continue to move forward. And really, I mean, I think from our perspective, this has got to be one of the more simpler places to operate. Globally. And so we're 100% focused here, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
So you also mentioned with Kazakhstan, if you can talk a little bit about the cost, is there what's the benefit of being there? Is it cheaper there, and how does it affect the margins, and what advantage does that give you?
Yeah, well, I think this is also one of the things that's really attracting, the Western companies. We felt that when we first got involved there, as I said, in the back end of COVID, when it was even tough to get into the country, that when you overprint mineral endowment, the lack of modern exploration, and a cost structure that arguably is one of the lowest cost structures anywhere, to explore, develop, and operate mines, that we would see more and more interest from the majors to come and get set up here underneath this new mining law that was passed in 2018. So for us, as an example, I mean, the cost of diesel at the pumps, if I'm going there in a couple of weeks' time, I'm sure it'll be the same as it was, 8 weeks ago when I was there, and as the same as it was the year before, even though with all this activity that we're having globally that is impacting oil prices, the cost of diesel is about 45 cents a liter, right? The cost of power in the region that we're in is 2.5 to 3 cents a kilowatt hour. The cost to drill a meter of core is about $110 to $120 a meter. And so when you think about it, whether it be through the lens of an exploration company where capital is always finite, or if you're thinking about it through the lens of a company that wants to build and operate a mine, at the end of the day, your hurdle to find mineral deposits that are likely to be economic and can be mined and extracted and turned into things is so much lower in Kazakhstan than a lot of other parts of the world. So there's no helicopters to be dealing with. You're not dealing with 5,000 meter mountains and elevation changes. We're at 250 meters above sea level. It's flat like a tabletop. You can count power lines for 25 or 30 kilometers if you've got good eyesight. And then your energy cost, of course, is some of the lowest in the world. And this is what's attracting, as I said, not only the large companies, but the European Union. There's a lot of interest from Europe over the last number of years. You're seeing more and more interest from the US government as well, the Western nations, because Kazakhstan is long energy. They're long critical minerals, they're long agriculture. And guess, what do we need in the world today?
All the above. So, Darren, can you tell me a little bit about just kind of the LMS a little bit more? Like my understanding from what I've seen is that you guys are picking up on drilling quite a bit. What excites you? What kind of stuff are you seeing? If you can tell us about the activity results, and like you said, if you can tell us a little bit more about the scale.
So the scale in this country is big. I guess it's probably the simplest and most direct way that I can refer to it. The LMS license is one of a number of licenses that we have, but the LMS Amandai license combined is about 530 square kilometers. So the first thing that I think you need to get your head around is just the scale and the size. And when you come to visit and you're standing out in the steppe and you're looking for, like I said, literally 20, 30, 40 kilometers, you're counting power lines. It gives you a very good sense in terms of the scale of the region and also the size of the license package that we've been able to procure. Now, that 530 square kilometers is out of a total of 3,300 square kilometers. But as I mentioned, that has been, our primary focus here over the last 24 to 30 months. And so at LMS, what we did initially, there was some historic work that was done there by the Soviets. And then also subsequently, about 18, 19 years ago, there was some shallower drill holes that were done. That identified copper gold near surface. Now, when you're out there and you're walking, you're not seeing really much of all for geological outcrop. And this is one of the challenges that exists in this part of Kazakhstan. But when you think about where the big companies in particular are doing exploration today, in many cases they're looking in areas where there's cover, because if there's geological outcrop or hills or mountains that stick out, probably doesn't matter where you are on the planet, at some point over the last 150 years, someone's gone up, sampled, taken a sample, and identified what's there. But if you're sitting undercover, in our case, it's between 5 and roughly 35 meters of unconsolidated cover, you don't know what's there. And so you're really relying then on, initially on geophysics. You're then looking at soils and whether soils can help to help you vector in. And then ultimately you're looking at top of bedrock drilling and then core drilling. And so for us, we did an initial program that was just over 4,000 meters. And those first set of results were released in January and February of last year, so 2025, not a long time ago. And then subsequently we went to two drills, and we completed 10,000 meters of drilling last year. And this year, we've doubled the drills again to four drills, and initially a 20,000 meter program, which we've subsequently doubled now to 40,000 meters. So we expect to complete 40,000 meters of drilling at LMS this year, which combined with the drilling from last year and 2024 would take us to, roughly 54,000 meters of drilling.
So with that potential, where are you guys in terms of market cap? And I mean, is the big story the what's keeping you guys from being bigger than you guys are?
Well, I mean, this is a treasure hunt. And I think that, for us, when you think about the evolution of copper gold discoveries and in terms of what we feel we're on to at LMS, I think in some regards it's still very early days. I mean, we've reported 38 holes. And so far, I mean, probably on a rough basis, about 60% of the value of the drilling so far is from gold and about 40% from copper. Clearly this is a gold rich copper gold porphyry system. We're quite confident that we've identified three different porphyry centers, and this is across a mineralized geochem envelope that stretches about 10 kilometers. And so when you think about 10 kilometers by kilometer and a half or 2 kilometers, you've got 20 square kilometers of area. And so far we've got 38 holes only reported. So it's still in many regards relatively early days. And we're, with the drills that are going now, we're still getting surprised to the upside. But we've made some really interesting, I think, discoveries. We've got Bereski North, Bereski Central, and Bereski East are three individual porphyry centers we think are all part of the same system. And when we look at historically, whether it be in this region or elsewhere, where you see these very large alteration halos, where you've got lots of alteration, you've got mineralization over large areas, those often can hold multiple porphyry centers that that turn into combined large systems. And nearby we have the operating Boshoko mine, which is about 60 kilometers from Elemis. We have some of our licenses are actually completely surrounding that, and you drive by this on the way to the project. Boshoko's is a good example. I mean, this is over 1 billion tons. It's 0.3% copper, 0.13 gold, and it's producing copper at less than $1 a pound today, and producing 100 to 110,000 tons of copper and about 100,000 ounces of gold. So it's one of the lowest cost copper mines in the world, which combined with its sister mine Aktagai, which is to the south of where we're located, those two mines combined produce about, I think last year, about 370,000 tons of copper. So if you put that, together, that would be about the 10th largest mine in the world today, in terms of copper production. So for us, I mean, ultimately what we're trying to take advantage of here is we've got a very low cost structure. We know that, because we're not at 5,000 meters in the Andes and we're having helicopter support, et cetera, you've got high voltage power, you've got heavy rail in the area. The world's fifth largest coal mine is literally out the back door of the house that we rent and the office that we operate from in Ekibastuz. And so all the infrastructure is there. You're 250 meters above sea level. And so for us, it's really about trying to understand the system, the geological controls, and then through drilling, work through and get ourselves in a position where we can start to evaluate resource. But we know that we don't need, high grade material here, because of all those benefits that I just mentioned about. And so we're pulling holes with intervals that are as good, if not better, than, the head grade that's down the road, that is producing, copper at some of the lowest costs in the world. So for us, it's still early days, but we like the trajectory that we're on.
Darren, if you can tell us about your share structure, the number of shares, as well as options, warrants, and in particular, I'd love to ask you about ownership. Any institutions? You mentioned you guys are getting a lot of, the area is getting a lot of attraction. Any institutions that you guys have attracted so far, and is that kind of on the radar?
Sure. So the market capitalization is about 200 million Canadian, plus or minus. The stock today, I think, is $1.45 to $1.50 Canadian. Shares outstanding about 145 million shares. No warrants outstanding. So we've been really judicious with regards to how we've managed the capital structure of the company over the last 3 or 4 years, and I think on that basis we've been really careful about how we financed. We've had really good support from wealth advisors, family offices, Europe, Canada, the United States, and then more recently, really starting last year, we started to see institutional investors start to invest. So call it, maybe a third of the stock sits with institutional investors, some that are, based in the United States. We also have a strategic holder that holds about 8.3%. It's a Western-based mining company, unnamed, but they hold about 8%. And then the other one that is, I guess, would file is right around 9%, and that's Sprott Asset Management, predominantly out of the United States. So not Eric Sprott, but the Sprott Wealth Advisors as well. So we've got, a strong holding from that perspective, strong support that I think, people are quite excited about, this new frontier and the ability for us to continue to move forward, not having to spend huge amounts of dollars when we think about, the advantage of having good logistics and a low cost base when you're trying to do exploration. And then last month we successfully closed a $25 million Canadian bought deal. So cash in the bank right now, I think it's about 27 million or so. And that's, you know, adequate finance for us to continue with this 40,000 meter drill program this year, and really should take us towards the back end of next year as well. You know, with a program that would look similar or potentially even expanded again. So the dollars go a long ways in Kazakhstan. That's a big advantage for us. And we've been very judicious and I think careful about, you know, how we've managed the capital structure.
Yeah, you guys got a tight structure. Good job on that one. Darren, I do want to ask you what percent you own, how much skin you have in the game, and if you can also tell us a bit about yourself and the team that surrounds you to kind of ensure that you guys are set up correctly.
Sure. So management and the board holds about 6%, I guess, of the overall company. So I think of that and probably about 1.5 or something like that, plus or minus percent. It's you know, in this situation, you know, because of the way that the company started and evolved, there's no sort of early 1 cent shares. I mean, these are all shares that, you know, we've purchased in the market, participated in financings all the way along the way. So I think my cost base is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, I don't know, maybe 70 or 80 cents, you know, something like that. With regards to, you know, the team around us, as I said, Tim Berry, who's a geologist, is based in Kazakhstan. And this was, you know, I think one of the things that really differentiates us is that, you know, a key part of our management team is actually living there. And so that's a big advantage, I have to say. I mean, when we think about operating in Kazakhstan and you ask about the permitting, it is very straightforward, but you can't often, I think, with these jurisdictions, it's really difficult to manage them from remote control. And so having your foot on the pulse, you know, being in the traffic, and so that's a huge advantage for us. Matt Booth, our VP Exploration, has spent quite a bit of time, you know, in the geology and exploration realm, particularly in Latin America and with groups like First Quantum. In copper gold porphyries. Vladimir Suluburic, our chief geologist, originally from Serbia, and so spent a lot of time chasing after copper gold porphyries in Serbia, which of course is a well-known jurisdiction for that as well. Chris Richards, our CFO, based here in Vancouver as well. So you know, we as I said, a relatively new company that's got going, 100% focused in Kazakhstan. You know, we're all very much tied to this. We're not, you know, focusing on other jurisdictions because we just really think that the size of the prize here, as we try to peel the layers of the onion back, are quite substantial. And, you know, from our experience so far operating in Kazakhstan, we wouldn't pick anywhere else to work. And I can, you know, speak to that from working in dozens of countries in the past.
Darren, any other catalysts or big news, potential, you know, re-rating opportunities that you see in anything in the pipeline or milestones that we should be looking forward to?
So I think for us, I mean, the bulk of the focus is definitely on our Elemis project and that Bereski trend. You know, we think about how these porphyry projects often evolve. It does take patience, and I think that, you know, a good example of that is, you know, the discovery of and the development of Oyu Tolgoi, and that of course is owned by Rio Tinto today, one of the world's largest miners. You know, initially, it was BHP that was doing the exploration work on that. I think in the late 90s, Magma Copper, in fact, before that, then BHP when they acquired Magma. And then BHP walked away, and Ivanhoe Mines, of course, then entered in. And it took them a few years as well. And as it was, the big discovery hole that intersected that deeper Hugo Dummett deposit was hole 269. And today it's one of the most well-known copper gold projects in the world, held by one of the majors. And that is a structurally controlled trend of 12 or 13 kilometers, seven different porphyry centers, largely undercover, different depths as well in terms of erosion. So you've got a mix of surface mineable and also underground deposits. So I think for us, it's really about being patient. It's about being, you know, judicious with our capital, which we've done so far. But you can see the trend here, you know, going from one drill to two drills to four drills, you know, 4,000 to 10,000 to 40,000 meters this year. And we're finding a lot of metal. It's just a matter, really, I think, of putting all the pieces of the puzzle together and being patient. And we think we're in the right part of the world for this, and we know that even from a permitting and advancing perspective, that if we can continue to find metal and understand it, and string together, what is really anything within probably 10 or 15 kilometer radius is all one project, because again, we're not dealing with mountains or glaciers or international borders. We're going to be onto something that, one day will be a mine. Watch the space. We've got lots of news flow that's coming. We are, like a lot of places, challenged a little bit right now with regards to turnaround on assays. There's a lot more assays that are in the labs on the basis of over the last 12 months, capital that's been raised and more drilling that's taken place in just virtually all jurisdictions. Kazakhstan's not, outside of that. They got more than two times as many assays in the lab in Kazakhstan than they had last year. But we're managing through that, and ultimately are really excited about, what's over the next 6 to 12 months.
Awesome. Well, Darren, for our listeners, I want to disclose that I am not currently an investor of Aris Minerals. Darren has not, and Aris has not paid for this interview. I am not giving investment advice. I do encourage you guys to do your own due diligence. And one of the ways you can do that is to reach out to Darren, check out their website, the ticker. Darren, if you could one more time give us your website ticker and how people can reach out to you with questions.
Sure. Yeah. www.arasminerals.com. Ticker is ARK on the TSX Venture or ARRKF on the OTC. And feel free to send through an email at info@arasminerals.com.
All right. Well, thanks, Derek, for being here and for introducing us to your company. I'm looking forward to following your story.
Very good. Thanks again, Steve. It's been my pleasure.